Hi, and welcome to the G&J Show. I'm Gerhard.
And I'm Joss. As married couples, we all want strong marriages and healthy families. But what can we do to be that couple and family we've always dreamed to be?
Our show is dedicated to helping you improve your marriage, strengthen your family, and encourage you to live your best life.
We discuss practical resources and books and have conversations with other couples to find winning strategies and methods for your marriage and family.
Today we had on Matt Charbonneau. He's a religion teacher with 14 years of experience in the Ottawa area. And we talked about teenagers. We're all locked up inside now with basically the entire world on lockdown due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And we thought it'd be fantastic to talk with him to help all you parents of teenagers, maybe give you a little bit of insight and hopefully give you some ideas that can help you navigate these difficult times with a little bit less stress.
A little bit about Matt Charbonneau. Matt Charbonneau is, as well as being a high school religion teacher, he also has a website called www.mattcharbonneau.com. That's C-H-A-R-B-O-N-N-E-A-U. He titles his page God's Giveaways, and he has been published on other media sources. He also has a degree in journalism, so it was great chatting with Matt. He was well prepared.
Yeah, and he had a lot of great content and a lot of great insights into teenagers that you'll enjoy. All right, let's dive in.
How long have you been a high school teacher, out of curiosity now?
This, I believe, is my 14th year, 1-4.
Really? Cool. Okay. And what grades do you teach? All of them?
Primarily now, the last couple of years, I've been more assigned the grade 9, grade 10 panel. But I would say for 10 of those 14 years, I had grades 9 through 12.
Okay.
A personal preference, I rather enjoy having that variety. I get my hands with all of the grades, which all have their own personality and abilities. But I'm very familiar with the grades 9 through 12 panel. I taught a little bit of grades 7 and 8 prior to that. But more recently, I've been working specifically with the grade 9s this year in the last couple of years.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because we were thinking of picking your brain on working with teenagers and your experience with that. And then any like ideas or like ideally try to pull things out, because right now with the pandemic happening, everyone's locked up inside. I know there's a lot of people out there who have kids but might actually be parenting for the first time.
Time, so like everybody's having to become a teacher of of teachers of teenagers now who've never taught teenagers, right? So yeah. Maybe some tips for them. Also, like, I'm just curious about like what your thoughts are on this generation too. Like, we're Gerhard and I are the millennial generation. Would you be considered millennial too? Or are you the next
one? I think I'm noticeably older than you young chicks. I'm 43, so I come before the millennial curve, I believe.
Okay. What is that generation?
Millennial, the turnover would be, I think, 2 or 3 years above me. I'm at like the upper end of the millennials.
We're kind of squeak into millennials. Yeah. But then below us is the generation Z, right? Generation Z.
Yeah.
So that's like everybody born
after. Yeah, I always get the letters like Gen. I think I'm Gen X, and then a Gen Y came in, and then the millennial Gen Z. I don't know why. Yeah, but I see what you're saying. I mean, everyone has their own experience with a certain age demographic, and certainly mine in itself. I'm having to. This has been a challenge of mine in the last couple of years, right? Because a teenager 10 years ago is a different mold from a teenager in today's context. So here I am teaching in year 14, 14, 15, 16 year olds. Well, I've been doing that for the last 15 years, roughly, but they're not the same kid. They've been exposed to different cultural values. Their own brain wiring is different per se. And so I appreciate what you're saying though. Definitely trying to interact with a teenager can have its challenges.
Yeah, so like, that's an interesting point. Like, so what would be some of the things that you've seen within teenagers have changed over the last 10, 14 years that you've been teaching? Like, how are teenagers today different from teenagers 10 years ago?
Well, as biased as this might be, I definitely think that today's world is a lot more complicated than it was, say, a decade ago. We have a greater amount of social media, which, to Jocelyn's point before, and Gerhard, you touched on this in terms of parents actually having to quote unquote parent their teenager. You know, there's this pressed upon involvement on parents today because of the pandemic, and you're homeschooling out of necessity. You have to hold your child accountable. You've got to be more involved with them and invested in what their goings on are, school related, et cetera, because you're all at home and there's that homeschooling element. Prior to that, I think that there was this independence, I suppose, that was more or less say fair for many people. I'm not saying that was right or wrong, but I think that with the social media in the last several years, that's plus in that we are able to communicate much more and we're able to send information more rampantly. But I think it's definitely had a counter effect as well, a negative effect, in that, dare I say, teenagers today are less accounted or accountable and perhaps more entitled, or at least feeling that way. So much is done for them, or at least the impression can be everything is for you. You know, this navel gazing, this self-centeredness that many people can have. And I think that for, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, there's a bit of a delay. I'm just curious about the, sorry to interrupt. When you said that they're less accountable, do you want to just describe what you mean by that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I think there's, from my experience, and I touch on this with our classes when we're talking about values-based society today, there's a difference between responsibility and accountability versus entitlement or overprivileged, if you will. I think the work ethic that we teachers can see today is different from 5, 10, 15 years ago, okay? And again, I say this with a biased viewpoint. When I was a teenager, and again, I'm a bit of a dinosaur, there is that blood, sweat, tears sort of mentality. You know, roll up your sleeves, put in the elbow grease, all of those cliches. You want to earn something and know that it was deserved. It wasn't given to you. And I find that today it's quite easy for someone, a teenager especially, because they're in that very formative phase in their life. They're not an adult, but they're not a child. A teenager can be feeling, due to the exposure of messages around them through social media, for instance, through this overwhelming obsession with celebrity that we have in our society and in general, that everything comes easily, that everything is given to you, and others will serve you. You know, you snap your fingers and someone's going to do it for you. You see an entourage around a celebrity. You don't know what they do, but you know that they have a lot. And so for teenagers, the art of getting a good grade based on merit, based on the extra hours of study, based on the extra help at lunch, based on the paying attention in class, that's lost on many. Not all of them. There are still those honorable, really determined ones that are saying, yes, I want to rise above. And yet, I think for many, there's this notion that things should just happen naturally. They should just come easily. And it's a shock for many when they're given this rude awakening that, oh, you mean I really have to work? I have to think? You know, there are times when I'll speak with my students about grade results or about class discussions. I'm like, what's going on here, folks? I sense that this is new territory for you. And I remember a student, we were having a very frank discussion. And I said, talk to me, please. Let me in, because I need to know what's inside your head right now. I'm a little concerned about where our class is headed right now, the productivity and your understanding of material. And one student says, well, sir, it's not that stuff is hard necessarily. It's just you make us, and she stopped in mid-sentence. with that TH at the end. I said, make you what? Never mind. I said, make you what? Make you think? And I said, well, yeah. I said, oh my goodness. Dare I be one of those teachers that is actually going to challenge you? That is not going to roll out the red carpet? That is going to put you in a position to succeed, equip you for success, but actually make you walk through the door? And so I think that some teenagers, it's that adolescent stage where we're expecting not only to be served the platter of food, given the cutlery in our hands, but also that cutlery to be brought to our mouth and someone holding the chin open so the food could be fed inside. So I think that from years past, that that has been becoming clearer, where a lot of students are expecting more given without having to output as much. And again, that's not every teen. That's not every teen. I still see many who work hard, but I think just the prevailing observation that I and other teachers have that we see, and it's, you know, again, through what we see in celebrity, what we see in social media, what you see in mainstream media, things just happen so easily. And it's this, you know, easy disposability. You're done with something, you throw it out, it comes, you snap your fingers, you can order online and it's there tomorrow. That fast action, instant gratification sort of attitude that we have in society today that many take for granted. And we're seeing that as a fruit that is continue to make its way in our mentality, and the teens are impacted greatly because of that.
So what do you think is a good response to that? Like, are you concerned about it? I know, like, Gerhard's dad is a prof, he teaches at university, and he starts every year, he's kind of a little bit more and more discouraged about the quality of the students that are coming into his engineering classes. And yeah, there's a sense of, like, for example, some of the students like demand to have certain grades, you know, or they get upset, like if they don't have what they want, even though they're not putting the effort in to get what they want. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's a little bit worrisome to look at that. I know people are looking at the millennials thinking, I don't know, whatever about us, but I'm looking at the next generation thinking, like, how are you guys, like, I got a little bit freaked out myself because I was working in the school system too. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, these kids who I'm teaching or that I'm with today, they're going to be my doctor tomorrow. You know, they're going to be our nurses. They're going to be our, like, teachers for the future generations. It's like, are you scared about that?
I'm for people in our shoes when talking with an adolescent. And I suppose I need to remind myself that we were all teenagers at one point, and there's a different psyche. You know, if you talk to any psychologist or anthropologist, the attitude adjustment that is happening in that teenage period, that they're not fully formed yet, right? Keep in mind, we have the adult brain, we've gone through lived experience, we've had professional experiences that have taught us, shaped us, we've learned from, grown through, etc. They haven't had those encounters yet, but I can certainly sympathize with Gerhard's father, because I've heard stories and read articles and have talked with people anecdotally about that. You know, it's this trickle-up effect, that the more we lower the bar or keep the bar low at this stage, be it elementary school or high school, those students are only being fed that same message and coming to expect that same quote-unquote reality as they advance. So they graduate from secondary school with a grade, let's say hypothetically, as a 90, which should in truth be an 80, and they're going to work in an office thinking, okay, I'm going to get the six-figure salary in the company car right away. What do you mean I have to work at the grunt level and, you know, work in the mailroom and sort papers for a year to work my way up the ladder? University profs might be marking papers, and where they have so accustomed to grabbing that red pen and carving up a paper, this it would be considered murderous to use that adjective if they were to do that today, because, oh, I can't give a grade, so badly it would look poorly on the university, for example. So that whole curve element is applied, perhaps, exceedingly, you know. So I am worried that trickle-up effect is becoming more and more common, and professors or sessional lecturers, what have you, the college product, the university caliber, they too are being soured or reduced. I recall someone asking me, a grade 12 student, this would have been maybe about 10 years ago, asking me about the discrepancy the difference between a level 4 academically oriented 90s student at their class versus someone of 5 years prior. I said, well, don't take this the wrong way. I wasn't trying to be insulting to them, but he was asking a frank question. I wanted to give him a frank answer. They were heads and tails above you. And you are considered the cream of the crop in your class today. Your graduating class, you're the top end. But even you don't necessarily hold a candle to your peers of 5 years before you, because you've been shaped in a different light. The standards have been altered. We've come to expect less. And if we expect more, we're setting the bar, which I believe we should expect more. Don't get me wrong. I think having the bar set high is the right approach, but we're so accustomed to seeing the bar not attained that we just naturally lower it. And that can give us that false sense of reality or success, where we see, you know, many, many, many students get honor roll today. You know, like, I don't know if you remember the TV show Orange is the New Black. Well, the grade 80 is the new 70, you know, hypothetically, that sort of thing. And so I am concerned that students are leaving our system ill-equipped. I suppose the generation prior to us may have been feeling the same, however. You know, there's always, and you folks are proud parents, just like myself and my wife, and we can watch teenagers today or you know, youth younger, and we can say that adage, kids today, they just don't get it. Well, our parents were saying that about us. And their parents, I'm sure, were saying that about them, and their grandparents were saying that about their parents, etc. So it is that cyclical stage of life. But I do feel it's more pressing, and the concern should be more alarming in today's world because of all of the activity around. You know, that there are so many students involved in extracurriculars up the wazoo, and they have their friendship needs, they have the family commitments, they have their school demands, and many of them are feeling the pressures and the walls pressing in around them. Mental health and anxiety, you know, concerns are spiking, all for good reason. Again, I'm not trying to minimize those realities. And we see all of those things combined having effect. So to your question about the grade results or the preparedness, if you will, as the students grow older, at some point, we're going to have to cut the cord, so to speak, and ensure that they are ready for the next stage, you know, because Jocelyn, I've used the same lines in my classes. I've said, you guys are the future doctors, the future lawyers, the future bus drivers, the future, you know, orderlies in a hospital. When I'm dying and I'm in a hospital bed, I'm going to need someone to get my bedpan when I need to pee. And if I am taking paratranspo as an elderly, I'm going to have to trust my life in your hands. You're going to take me to my destination without looking at your cell phone for directions. If I need a lawyer for our mortgage payments or whatever it is, you know, heaven forbid I ever fall into some sort of legal sticky trouble, I'm going to need to make sure that the person handling my affairs is competent and is not going to be distracted by what some YouTuber had to say about some, you know, dress that a celebrity wore at the Oscars. And it's like, folks, you really need to buckle down. And this is the time, because in 5 years, you're not going to have that luxury. So it's always a challenge to meet them where they are. They're teenagers. They have a lot of distractions. They have a lot of needs. They have a lot of desires, but also want not excusing those distractions and trying to enlighten them and to be that you know, voice that I've seen this movie play out. I know where it leads. So learn from the wisdom that we elder folk have because of our experience. Try to impart that onto them, trusting that, you know, to use the biblical expression, that the seeds we plant are going to take root at some point. I think that's critical, is not to give up. You know, as discouraged as we might be as teachers or as parents or as just citizens in the world, and you see the teams around, whatever, to know that some seed is scattered and it's going to land on cement and is going to just burn in the sun. Some is going to fall on barren soil, but there's also going to be a lot of seed that is going to land on that fertile ground and is going to take root, and we're going to see that down the road where it's blossoming.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like really that there's like for the teenagers, it's almost like there's two main factors involved. One of it is they're developmentally not complete yet. Like, it's just scientifically, we know that. So there's that issue. But on the other hand, it sounds like there's also the systemic external factors that come in. Like we talk about social media, the 1,800,000 extracurriculars that everyone signed up for and has no time for anything, which then knocks on to mental health issues. And then there's a whole bunch of relational issues. So what are some things that parents can start to look at to help their teenager out in that systemic external side, knowing that like there's not much we can do to the developmental side except for hope they exercise, sleep, eat well, and eventually when they hit 25, their brain will be like wired up.
Yeah. I think, and you bring up some really good points, Gerhard. I think the keys to sum them up would be, from my standpoint, structure and support. Definitely, we cannot deny the psychological developmental stage they're in. As you mentioned, I mean, that's proven, that's indisputable that they are just where they are in life, formative times. Their thinking pattern is not the same as someone in their 50s. It's not the same as someone in their 7-year-old stage, whatever. And so they're going to be reacting. The hormones are kicking in, the life experience, the needs, the anxieties, all of those are naturally going to develop at this stage. But the external, the social variables around them, those are controllable. And I think the structure for that versus the support, you know, the patience, the compassion, the encouragement that can come with that psychological stage, the structural component is key when it comes to having to navigate through those demands, if you will. You know, yes, a teenager craves time with his or her friends. And yes, a teenager wants to pad the resume and to get involved with X number of extracurricular clubs. We have a focus on grades because whether it's our parent or our guidance counselor or the teacher we want to impress or the boss that is saying, well, you know, to have this job or a university, decreeing this as their cutoff line for acceptance, whatever it is, that's a pressure. Seeing all of these other things, the keeping with the Jones mentality that, oh, I must conform to everyone around me. I have to have these clothing articles, or I must eat this way or look this way in my body image, et cetera, et cetera. All of those to encourage, without doing so in a militant fashion, but to encourage a sense of structure, to say, you know what, sweetie, you know, to use that term of endearment for a child, it's important for you to get involved, but we also need to learn the art of priorities. What is most important? And also the need for and the benefit of balance. It is crucial to have not only your nose in the book, but your face in fresh air outside. You have to be, you know, surrounded by people that love you, and that comes with social skills. So you need to have the personality developed in order to, you know, ingratiate yourself in a party atmosphere or a public forum. You know, I'll joke with the students, you know, all work, no play makes Jack a dull boy. All play, no work makes Jack unemployed. And so we need to definitely have the notion that you can have your hands or your feet dipped in different pools of water, but you need to make sure which are the most important, you know, and though those might vary as well. We're juggling a lot of things, right? You think of a master juggler, they might have 10 balls in the air. Just as long as no ball touches the ground, they're doing all right. But it's a matter of how desperate they are to catch one. You know, are they in control, or are they lunging and barely catching that ball and flipping the other one up? So when it comes to those systemic or those social variables, do we really need to have 10 extracurriculars, or do we want them? You know, that's a difference, that needs versus wants sort of reality. What is most important? And again, that requires big picture thinking, something a teenager might not necessarily appreciate or have developed. That's, you know, surface level versus delving more deeply and appreciating the greater portion of the iceberg that an adult can relate to, having lived experience. So the structure to say, look, you need to get sleep, you need to eat, you need to have some exercise. How are we doing that? You also need to have family time. Yes, your friends are important. Your grades are paramount for your future. If you know, hopefully the family, from my perspective, comes from a faith standpoint. Say, look, we got to place God number one. We have to sit down and have family meals. You know, what does it say in scripture? Or what are the healthy factors in your life? Okay, so to surround yourself with those healthy, productive, beneficial outlets without getting overboard. Like when I was a kid, and again, I can only reference myself most directly as an anecdote. I mean, we had hockey in the winter and some swimming. If you weren't playing hockey, you were doing swimming. There may have been a you know, Beavers Cub Scouts program and Brownies and Girl Guides for Girls. Well, that is so lame compared to today when you have power skating, soccer indoors, you've got diving, you've got jujitsu, you've got all of these other options. And they're all good. They're all wonderful. But there's this inherent pressure that I have to do it all. And if I'm out every night for 3 hours at my extracurricular, I still haven't done my homework. I still haven't sat down with my family. I'm eating on the run. There hasn't been that direct contact with the parents or your siblings. And now I need to, you know, chat online with my friend and get caught up on FaceTime or, you know, surf the regular YouTube video, etc. So I definitely think that to be supportive to a teenager, but also to encourage some sort of structure, not in a controlling fashion, but to have them recognize the value of balance, the value of organizational skills and prioritizing, but also to know that they're loved, that they're encouraged, that someone is walking with them through the ups and the downs. That is going to be important for them to have that stable and steady voice of experience to know, okay, I'm going to get through this. I'm going to hit some peaks and valleys. This too shall pass, as the Lord says, you know, and it's like, I will be able to get through this, but I cannot bite off more than I can chew.
So do you think that with COVID-19, forcing us all into isolation, and kids learning now from home, and now they don't have these extracurriculars. Do you think this is an opportunity for teenagers and even parents to look at, I mean, even learning differently? Like you said, like sometimes in the classroom, like I know the kids can get on their cell phones, they can be distracted by each other. Like maybe this working from home is an opportunity, maybe it will even change education in the future, if it turns out for the better.
Most definitely. I think we're certainly in uncharted territory. We're going through a quote unquote new normal. I know myself, I've heard that expression. I've said that cliche a lot lately. But while we don't know where we're headed, whether it be in education or business work or, you know, church demonstration or what have you, I think that this pandemic and the change in lifestyle that it's thrown on everyone is going to have a lasting effect and is causing us to evaluate how we have been living in our regular activity, whether it be school or work or family relationship or what have you. So with the students at home, without the opportunity to socialize as much with their friends or to do all of those activities they've been accustomed to learn in a completely different format, very unconventional, generally speaking, to this point, it's kind of forced everyone to reassess, but also alter or make modification to what their style has been. And that's all, you know, certainly forcing upon us growing pains. There's an adjustment period that is not going to be temporary, in my estimation. I'm not an expert. I certainly don't work in the Ministry of Education. I'm not an official in the school boards. I can't speak with the greatest authority other than my own envisioning here. But I think for teachers and students alike, for any school administrators and for parents at home, this is an opportunity as much as it is an experience that was unplanned and unexpected. It's an opportunity for us to recollect ourselves. And I know for myself as a teacher, I'm having to alter my program. You know, class lessons that I've taught, that I've been able to tweak in the past, or that I've been able to add on to, well, I'm, dare I say, having to reinvent the wheel right now, because I don't have the necessary equipment or the resources, or it's just impractical to teach the way I've been teaching or the material that I've covered previously in this new online setting. A parent who has simply said to their student, have you done your homework? Okay, well let me help, and I'll trust that you're working on it in your room. Well, now is a perfect opportunity for them. What do you want? I understand that it's a little odd for you to be going through materials self-instructed, essentially. How can I help? Let's tackle this together. Which allows for a moment of quality. And so this homeschooling opportunity for parents, as painstaking as it might be, and for students and for school officials, occasion for us to reevaluate what has been effective and successful.
I believe we are coming up on the 40 minutes. You've covered a lot of really good topics. What's one or two things you'd want to tell parents right now to help them with their teenager during this time?
Number one, probably relax. And I don't say that in a demeaning fashion, but more as an encouragement. To know that this is a very anxious time for everyone. And I think we are all appreciating that we should not expect perfection, but we should do the best with what we have and do our best how we can. We're homeschooling two kids in senior kindergarten and junior kindergarten right now. And I think the attitude would be the same if you're homeschooling a kid in grade 5 or in grade 12 or anything else. To know that you have an unenviable lot to deal with right now, but all you can do is your best. And we're all swimming in this ocean of waves right now. So to keep your perspective clear, to not get overboard in terms of worry, but just to stay as calm as possible, appreciating all we can do is our best. And I think for students and parents alike, if you can manage that, knowing that it's going to be uncertain at times, but if you can just stay as steady as possible, try to just stay on course with that consistent schedule and to do your best and check in with your teacher if you have questions, but also to appreciate, you know, all of the blessings around, because as we talked about before, this is a great time to do a board game as a family. This is a great time to learn how to cook or whatever else. These are all learning opportunities. They're all special times together. But when it comes to the nitty gritty X's and O's, to know, okay, well, my grade itself, I should focus less on the average on paper and more on just making sure I'm making the most of this experience as much as possible.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks very much for your time, Matt. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
It was great to be with you guys. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for joining us for this episode on Teenagers with Matt Charbonneau.
We hope that you picked up some practical tips, insights, or ideas that can help you during this time. If you have any questions or comments, you can reach us at gnjshow.com.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, please rate and review us on the podcast app you're using to listen to us right now. This will help us to reach new audiences.
Don't forget to subscribe as well. Once again, I'm Gerhard.
And I'm Joss. You're listening to The GNJ Show.
Until next time, keep smiling.